Hey everyone, I'm Adrian Wojnarowski, host of the Vertical Podcast with Woj, powered by Digital Media, here in Indianapolis today with Golden State Warriors all-star forward Draymond Green, a two-time first-team All-NBA defensive player, an NBA champion, an Olympic gold medalist, and one of the most unique players and most powerful personas in the NBA. This was Draymond at his very best, insightful, reflective, and yes, sometimes defiant. We talked about his love and history with football, how the two sports differ, and contract structures and risk, and yes, his determination to become an NBA Defensive Player of the Year. In a season and a year of both personal, professional triumph and turmoil, Draymond opened up about his own introspection over mistakes made and lessons learned before some of his missteps became irreparable to his life and career.
Some things happened to me where it didn't completely take me out, but it showed me that I had to tighten up everything in my life. I had to tighten up everything off the court, on the court. I had to be better.
I also talked to Draymond about his recruitment of Kevin Durant and why he always believed that KD was on the cusp of making that leap of faith to Golden State.
I knew he wanted to be here. I knew it was the perfect fit. Like, I knew he wanted to have fun. He wanted to enjoy every bit of it. He wanted to play a great brand of basketball. He wants to win. And we have all that here, right here for him. Everything he was explaining, he wants. It's like, man, this is the spot for you. I promise you.
This is a terrific visit, and I think you'll enjoy it as much as I did. Here's Draymond Green. Here in Indianapolis with Draymond Green of the Warriors. Draymond coming off a back-to-back, took some time out this morning, headed to the stadium for the Colts-Titans game.
Absolutely, absolutely. First off, Woj, I want to thank you for having me on.
Hey,
you
know, Draymond.
I've heard this podcast a million times, and, you know, you get great guys on here, so I'm honored to be one
of your guests. I appreciate it. You guys do the work. How many times in the course of an NBA season does an NFL game fall in a city on an off day? Almost never.
Almost never. And, you know, I think we get a luxury of being in the Bay Area, you know, where you got two teams. And so if we are at home on an off day, there's usually a game going on. But, you know, it gets a little hectic out there sometimes, too. Obviously, the Raiders are right there. 49ers are a little bit more of a hype, you know, to get to the game. But just in a random city on an off day and NFL game, it doesn't happen much.
You were born to be an Oakland Raider, weren't you? you look at that sometimes and go, I should have been. You watch the old 70s, 80s Raiders, right?
Yeah.
With the Raiders theme, Al Davis.
Absolutely.
I would have loved you.
I look at that stuff all the time. And, you know, I've actually gotten to know their GM, Reggie, really well. You know, and guys in their organization, that organization is doing really well. But, you know, I love the whole theme of the Raiders and what it embodies. Like it,
the quarterback
it's
must
cool.
go down, and he must go down hard. That all right?
Absolutely.
So it's Tennessee, Indianapolis here, and Klay Thompson's a Tennessee fan. How is he a Tennessee Titan fan?
Listen,
what I've been told.
I think that right there sums up Klay. you just don't know. Like, I mean, you can sit and you can try to figure it out, and I can try to figure it out, and it'll probably frustrate you more trying to figure it out than anything. You know, that's just Klay, like Tennessee Titans. I mean, this guy grew up in Portland. All right, so maybe he'll adopt Seattle.
Right.
And then Orange County. Maybe he'll adopt the Chargers. Even the Raiders, maybe. And he somehow ends up a Tennessee Titans fan. If I had to guess, it's probably he'd like the color baby blue.
Right.
Like that's the only thing with Klay that I could really see him like it.
Were the two best days you've ever spent in sports, or the best day you ever spent in sports, was it playing the green-white game at Michigan State? You practiced with a football team, like kind of like a ceremonial practice, right?
Yeah.
But they put you in the game when you were before your senior year?
Yeah, it was right before my senior year. So earlier that year, well, early in my junior year, I told Coach D, at our Midnight Madness, the football team came over. It was the night before a big game for them. I think it was Michigan game, if I'm not mistaken, but it was a big game. And I said, Coach D, I want to play in the spring game. He was like, all right, come out. So like 2 weeks before the spring game, I went to his office, and I said, Coach D, I was serious. I want to play in the spring game. He said, all right, come out that Wednesday. The spring game was like on a Friday. Come out that Wednesday before for practice, and we'll get you all the uniform equipment, and you can play. I'm like, all right, cool. So I go out to practice, and they were teaching me all these things. Like, if a guy jam you up, you swipe down and, you know, pull your arm through. And, you know, if they jam you this way, you can just swim over them. And they taught me all this stuff. And another thing it taught me was why so many freshmen redshirt. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like if the linebacker's here and the safety's here, you run this route. And if the linebacker's there and the safety's there, you run that route. And if somebody bump you off the line right here, you go there. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, how can you possibly remember all this stuff? And so it gave me a completely different respect for football players, first off. But, you know, and they taught me all this stuff about getting jammed up off the line. And I get out there. I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to catch a pass. So I go in as a tight end first. And they're picking with me. And so the quarterback said, all right, we're going on set hit. And the whole defensive line in front of me going, set hit, set hit. So I feel like they had set me up. So I went false start, and everybody else was just looking at me. So I'm like, oh, man. So then they line me up at receiver. I line up at receiver, and Johnny Adams is like, he's as close to the line as you can possibly be without going offside. So I'm thinking to myself, I forgot all this stuff. I'm like, I'm just about to go catch a pass. And I'm like, why is he this close to the line? But I'm just thinking off on it. And I try to come off the line, and he jammed me up so bad. It was ridiculous. And I mean, I drew a 10-yard penalty, so that's kind of my claim to fame, that I got a first down, and, you know, I just live with that.
And you play for a basketball coach who really secretly wants to be a football coach, right? Tom.
Absolutely.
Tom loves it more than,
I mean,
he must have been there cheering you. He, like some basketball coaches would be, get away from there. I don't want you. I bet you Tom loved it.
Oh, he was in heaven about it. Like, I mean, he kept calling me in his office like, man, you're playing the spring game. This is great. Never once did he say, hey, be careful. Don't get hurt. Oh, man, you're playing the spring game. I can't wait to come to the game. This is incredible. Like, I think Coach Izzo's first love is football. I mean, he really loved that sport. Like, and, you know, obviously with him loving Michigan State the way he do, the support that he shows to the football program is just like second to none. But, like, there's not many people who love the game of football more than him. I mean, he truly, truly enjoys football, I think, more than basketball.
And you hear, too, always, hey, the NFL, you know, they look for guys built like you. Can we make them a tight end? They're always looking for great athletes, physical, tough physical guys that we can – they always think we can make you a football player. We can. Was there ever a point where you said, I'm the prototype to play it, that you said, could I try to play too? Or was Michigan State just such a high level, it would be hardest to walk in to that? Or
yeah, I mean, it was such a high level at Michigan State. Coach D'Antonio has done such a great job with that program. Obviously a down year this year. Yeah. But if we're going to have one down year every 10 years, I'll take that. But, you know, you're talking guys out there who they eat, breathe, and sleep football. And, you know, they're extremely strong. And it's just such a huge commitment, you know, to do that I never once thought about doing it. I thought, you know, I put all my time into basketball and try to make it, you know, the best way I can, try to do the best things that I can in this game. And, you know, that was pretty much since my freshman year. You know, I played football my freshman year of high school. And guys were taking my knees out, and every time I'm trying to block, I was playing tight end, like chop blocking me, and it was killing my knees. And I went into basketball season that year, partly from going through that football season, knees was killing me, and partly because I was on a growth spurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I wanted to quit football that year. My knees were hurting me so bad, and they were just kept going at them. And my grandfather wouldn't let me quit. He said, hey, you've never quit anything you ever started. You started it, you finish it. You don't want to play next year, then that's okay, but you're not quitting this year. And so the rest of that year was just grueling for me. And after that, it was like, all right, let me see. Am I this good in football or am I better in basketball? Whichever one I decide I'm better at, that's what I'm going to stick with. I'm going to give it everything I got and roll with that one.
Right. Contracts are guaranteed. Nobody's going at your knees.
Absolutely.
In the NBA. Did you notice last summer? It was really last summer when – contracts, you know, I saw it as like you'd break a story and then you'd see people were seeing the numbers on NBA players, some of which they had never heard of or didn't know this guy had great value. And the reaction of NFL guys of, that's all guaranteed. Was it noticeable to you about how some of the NFL guys reacted to, because they don't have guaranteed contracts, they don't have the security you guys do on injuries. Did that get on your radar?
It was definitely on my radar. You know, when you see these NFL guys, you're talking some of the top players in the league making less guaranteed money than the seventh man on a team in the NBA. I mean, that's pretty sick to me. And, I mean, I don't understand the whole model of it. Like, you're talking about this multi-billion-dollar organization, you know, this organization who, I mean, I'm not sure on the numbers, but I'm almost positive the NFL makes $1 billion a year.
I would think so.
Yeah. And, yeah, you have guys out here who are at risk every day of concussions, leg injuries, upper body injuries, shoulder injuries. I mean, you name it. I mean, I've heard of a guy getting, like, his stomach lining ripped out playing football. And you mean to tell me these guys' contracts are non-guaranteed? I just don't understand that. And, yes, I understand that it's a very violent sport and guys get hurt so much, but they should be rewarded for that. And so I think it's pretty ridiculous. I think the model of the NFL is just as bad as the model of college. You know, when you look at a college basketball player, a multi-billion-dollar organization, and, you know, and I say this in a non-political way. I don't say this in the stance of, guys have stood out and, you know, used their voice and all those things. Like, I'm not talking about that, but some of these organizations are almost like slavery. You know, when you're talking, especially college, you know, when you're talking, you got all these guys playing, really funding this business and does not make a penny. And you mean to tell me, oh, they're getting a scholarship? Well, number one, these universities don't pay for the scholarships. Donors pay for those scholarships, number one. And, I mean, some of these universities, even if they were paying for the scholarship, they make the stuff back. If you said take a basketball team, some of these universities makes every player scholarship money back in one game. I mean, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so you go back, getting off track a little bit, but you go back to football, and you have these guys who, I mean, a home football game. Like I said, I don't know the numbers.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it can easily bring in $50 million, easily at least, in one game. When you get to adding up ticket sales and jersey sales and parking and concessions, I'm sure that can bring in $50 million in one game.
I don't know if it's 50, but it's a lot. And here's the other thing, like you think in college sports, if you were the argument, if you, let's say you went to UCLA and you're an actor, you're a musician, nobody would ever think, well, you can't go play, there's a role over at one of the movie lots that you could go, you got the role, you could be in a movie. They would never say, well, you can't be part of the drama program at a school, or a musician could go get a paid, like, why would athletics be different than any other realm in college where you're really good at something? And they always said, well, there's plenty of people who get into college just for a specialty that they're really good at. They may, you know, and that brings value to that school just like athletics does, but they've isolated college athletics. And, you know, there was a cry. It seemed like it was going toward it for a while. Then it seems like it's died down again about guys getting paid. The only way it'll ever change is there'll be a Final Four. And guys will say, and I talked to Jerry West about this, and he talked about playing in the NBA in the 60s, and he and I guess it was Elgin Baylor threatened to not go out. They weren't going to go out and play an All-Star game.
Yeah.
And that started toward collective bargaining and a little more just quality of life stuff for players. It was like insurance and basic stuff, but they threatened to walk.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that's ever going to work, I think, on a college level. If they have their TV show and there's no actors out there for their television, to me, that's the only way it would change. But it's hard to get young people who this is their one chance, or they've worked toward, are they going to sacrifice for every generation after them in years?
Yeah.
That's hard to ask of an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old. That's hard to organize.
Absolutely. It's hard to organize. It's hard. You know, I've played in two Final Fours. You know, and you're talking about telling a guy, hey, man, you go out there, you can make a statement, and you can help every college player in history, you know, to come after you, you can really change it. I go out there and sit it out and don't play. I mean, I know how fun Final Fours were. I know how amazing it was to have the possibility to compete for a championship. I lost in one Final Four game, and I lost in a championship game. I mean, it's tough, you know, and that's one of the greatest events, you know, when you're talking athletics and sports. That's one of the greatest events on earth, you know. So, I mean, that's hard, but yet, if someone did it, I mean, like, they can change it for everybody else to come after them. You're talking about some guys who can really make a name, not only for themselves, but also just athletes in general, the power that an athlete has, you know, because at the end of the day, you fund the business. NBA players, there's no NBA without the players, and there's no NFL without the players. There's no college athletics without the athletes. You make the business. And all the power that you really have, and you know, but you don't know. You know, but, man, if some players did that, that's, you're right. That's the only way it'll change. And will it ever happen? Like I said, I wouldn't feel comfortable telling a young athlete who's worked their tails off to get to the Final Four, hey, man, go out there, sit out, and you're going to make a statement. That's tough to do.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Just so our listeners can understand what's happening here, Draymond has continued throughout the interview to admire my Movement Watch. Movement Watches was founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high-quality, minimalist products at revolutionary prices. With over 500,000 watches sold to customers in 160 countries around the world, Movement Watches has solidified itself as the world's fastest-growing watch company. You don't need a max contract. You don't need your employer to be in luxury tax to be able to buy one. This company was started by two broke college kids who wanted to wear stylish watches but could not afford them, so they started their own watch company. Movement Watches start at just $95. At a department store, you're often looking at $400 to $500. Movement figured out that by selling online, they were able to cut out the middleman and retail markups, providing the best possible price. Movement offers classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism, and they've sold over 500,000 watches in over 160 countries. I hadn't worn watches for a very long time. Like everybody else, or like many others, I've got my phone, there's a clock on it, it was good enough for me. But there's something about wearing it, the way it feels, how it looks. I love the thing. You can get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to movementwatches.com. That's MVMTWatches, WATCHES.com/Woj. MVMTWatches.com/Woj, WOJ. And join the movement. Now back to Draymond. Draymond, this year with the Warriors, you guys were in Milwaukee last night and you make a great defensive play at the end to sort of stave off the comeback they had. 11-2 now. Is this how you imagined this team, the evolution of it, how the pieces were going to fit? Has it gone according to form through really just the first short part of the season? Or has anything surprised you about how this group and how the pieces, what you gained and what you lost with the changes this summer?
There haven't been many surprises. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we knew the things that we were losing and we knew what we were gaining. And one thing we knew is that, you know, with this team, what we're gaining is we're gaining a lot of offensive power. A lot of offensive power. We're losing some consistency, you know, as far as guys who've been here, you know, who understands everything that, you know, what the offense is about, what the defense is about, you know. But we can get guys to, you know, come in and help fill those voids and, you know, help bring that back, you know. But I think it's went very, very well and, you know, kind of what I thought it would be. You know, one thing that surprised me is everyone said, oh, man, y'all lost rim protection. It's, yeah, we lost in the way, and yet we're averaging more block shots than we have, you know, and all these things. So, you know, it's been a unique thing. I think it's been very fun you know, figuring this thing out. I mean, I look from where we were in game one, which I didn't expect to be that bad in game one, but we were really bad. And where we are now, and it's like night and day. And then I look at where we are right now, but the possibilities of where we're going to be, and it's scary.
Was opening night getting drilled by the Spurs at home, was that good for this team?
I think it was one of the best things that could ever happen to us. Number one, you know, it's easy to say, oh, man, we got this, we got that. Like, we got KD, Steph, Clay, myself. Like, we're going to be all right. We got Andre. We're like, can't nobody touch us. And I think it's easy to fall into that. And all of a sudden you come out and you get cracked by 30 points. And it's like, oh, let's reevaluate this thing. Like, let's figure out what we really need to do and what's really going to help this team. And so I think that was really one of the best things that could ever happen to us. And when it happened, I sat there and I was like, hey, you know, man, that's, I was sitting on the bench talking to a couple of rookies, Patrick McCall, and I was talking to Kevon Looney, and I'm like, hey, fellas, I'm happy this is happening to us. Like, we needed this. And, you know, it was good for us. It was an early wake-up call, one that we needed. I think one that I've heard people say is like, oh, it released some of the expectations off them. No, it didn't. You know, that didn't release a single expectation off of us. And so it was different. You know, it was a shocker. But like I said, I think it was really, really, really good for this team and something that we needed, and to have that right away. You know, like I said, it really made us lock in and, you know, focus on the things that we need to focus on if we want to be good.
Your role defensively, there's even – you've been the best defensive player on a great defensive team. You know, so far the numbers say this is not a great defensive team, but individually, you've played as good on that side of the ball as you ever have. And you saw it in Milwaukee. It was almost like a, you know, we're going to go at their star cornerback on the last pass play and, you know, remind people about that. But you've twice been runner-up to Kawhi Leonard for Defensive Player of the Year award. I think you'd like to get that at some point. Do you wonder, is it going to be harder? Even if I'm better individually, if the perception is our defense as a team isn't as good, do you think that makes it harder to win that award?
You know, that's definitely, you know, something that I want to win. Extremely serious about trying to win.
You were second
award.
In most improved player, but that ship's passed. You can't ever get that.
Yeah,
again, right?
It's probably over for that one. You know, it's I think it's something that you look at and it can go one or two ways. You know, you can look at this team and say, oh, number one, I don't think our defensive numbers will ever be extremely high or, like, you know, something off the wall because this team plays so fast. You know, you're talking about a team who, like, we can go 5 or 6 possessions in a row and shoot the ball within the first 6 seconds of the shot clock. Now, that's dangerous for a team to guard. At the same time, it's dangerous for transition defense. And so, you know, it makes it tough. And you know, I think when you look at our defense, that's where we get hit at the most is in transition. When we get our set defense, we're pretty good. And so I look at the numbers and, you know, I think about those things. And then I also think about, you know, this is a completely different type of defense. And yet we're, what, 13 games in now, I think? Mm-hmm. It'll take a little time, you know, for all that to come together. And, you know, I think I've been incredible defensively this year. And you know, it's one of the things that I've really locked in on. You know, I focused in on, like, I'm so locked in on that end of the basketball right now, and it's fun. You know, and I think a part of the reason I'm so locked in on it is because of everybody talking about what we can't do on that end and how we'll struggle on that end. And, I mean, just all the doubt on that end, you know, from everyone, that it just has me at another place mentally and the things that I want to do. So, you know, when I look at that and say, man, our numbers are low, I wonder if people will vote for me. Honestly, I don't think that would affect it. Because if you're voting on just a defensive number, and this is no disrespect to Kawhi, because I think Kawhi is an incredible defender, but the Spurs' defensive numbers will probably always be better than ours. Their pace is probably always a lot slower than ours also. So they're usually playing a set defense. Not getting beat in transition as much, although they're playing a little faster this year, not getting beat in transition as much because they don't play as near as fast as us. So their defensive numbers as a team will probably always be better than ours because they play a lot slower game than us. So I think that makes a difference. And if you know, if that did cost me, then hey, so be it, you know, but I'm trying to make it to a point this year where it'll be hard to deny me that award. And that's my focus. That's what I'm going to try to do. I was telling someone the other day, I can't remember who I was talking to. I'm not a selfish guy when it comes to awards or stats. I really can care less. This is one thing I'm very selfish about. I want to win that Defensive Player of the Year award bad.
Why is that one important?
It's important because, number one, I am, like, I love playing defense. Like, it's so fun to me playing defense. You know, I like to compare it to the excitement that Clay gets out of playing offense, you know, playing, shooting the basketball.
And rooting for the Titans.
Oh, man, that guy, he's incredible. Like, that's the excitement I get on the defensive end of the basketball. And so, you know, I like to think that I'm a great defender. And, you know, I think when you think you're a great defender, that is the one thing where that's how you stamp it. That's how you show, like, I am the best defender. And, you know, I'm really tight with Ben Wallace. And so every year we talk about, he like, hey, you got to get you a Defensive Player of the Year champ. You know, he always tell me that. And so, I want it for that reason, you know, so I can talk junk with Ben. But, you know, I just want it as some, like I said, as a defensive player, like, I just want to win that. Like, that's the biggest honor you can get as a defensive player. And the reason I feel okay with being selfish about that, because if you're selfish on the defensive end where you're trying to lock someone up, well, that's usually going to bode well for your team. And I think it's okay to be selfish on that end. Not selfish in the fact of, oh, I'm not going to help, because I probably overhelp sometimes. You know, I am completely okay with saying, when it comes to that, I am as selfish as it can get right now.
What percentage of being a great defender in this league is just tactical, fundamentals, footwork, strength, all those things? How much of it is mental, intimidation, getting inside guys' head? Do you ever think about the balance of that and what's most important or what's as important?
You know, I think there's a couple things that's very important. Understanding what another team or another guy wants to do, I think that's very important. I think if you can get into an offensive player's head, I think that helps out a lot. And then just sure will, you know, sure, you just wanting to dominate that side of the basketball. I think at the end of the day, you have to want to more than anything on the defensive end. Like, everybody wants to shoot the basketball, and that's the game we play. That's how you've grown up playing. That's what you, if you watch, who's rewarded in All-Star games? Usually guys that average 20-some points a game. Who gets the MVP? Usually guys that average 26, 27, or 30 points a game. And so that's what you've been taught your entire life, that, and everybody wants to shoot. How can you fault someone for that? That's what you've always learned. But when it comes to the defensive end of the basketball, it's just will. It's wanting to do it. It's wanting to get that stop. It's taking that end of the floor extremely serious. And so I think when you talk about angles on the defensive side, when you talk about strategy, when you're talking about getting in someone's head, I think at the end of the day, the most important thing is really just wanting to do it. You know, you don't have to be the most athletic guy to be a great defensive player. You don't have to be super fast to be a great defensive player. You can have great hands. Like, Ron Artest wasn't the fastest. He was one of the strongest guys you've ever seen. And his hands were incredible. You put the ball on the floor, it could be gone at any second. And so I think, you know, it's really just will and wanting to do it.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Draymond's headed over to the Colts-Titans game here in Indianapolis on a Sunday afternoon. A few of the Warriors are headed over. These guys are connected. They get tickets. The rest of us, you need to hear about SeatGeek. For us, buying tickets for sports and concerts has been a pretty confusing process for a long time. And I'm not sure a lot of other ticket sites have wanted to change that, but SeatGeek's different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that make it easier than ever to buy and sell tickets. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if ticket prices fall. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. It's perfect. It's my favorite part of the SeatGeek process. And here's a great part of it. Maybe the best part of all. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right into your pocket. And all you've got to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Then enter a promo code WOJ, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Come on, it does not get any easier than that. So support SeatGeek the way they've supported us here all across the Vertical Podcast platform. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ today. Back with Draymond Green. As your Golden State team sort of built its identity, and it was a top three, top five defensive team even before you won a championship, but people still viewed it as Splash Brothers, the offense, the shooting, what Steph was doing, what Clay was doing. Listen, I think a lot of ways you're the same guy you were at Michigan State. You approach the game the same way, but did that even build more the identity you created for yourself, that you were the alter ego to all that? And nice guys, not confrontational guys, that you in a lot of ways sort of became the alter ego for the whole team. You'd say the stuff maybe other guys were thinking but wouldn't, or was it impacted by everything that was going on around you?
Well, I think number one is just really being me. But number two also, I think you need that guy on your team. When you look at our team, then, like you said, you hear Splash Brothers and the three-point shooting and all that. And then you hear everybody say, oh, they're soft. I won't be in a situation where I'm considered soft. Like, I just don't roll like that. That's not me. And so, you know, I took that on. I took that role on, and I was excited and embraced it. And, you know, I think in order for us to be successful, which we've been, that I had to take that role on. And, you know, it's been a fun role for me, you know, to really just, like I said, but at the end of the day, it's not like I'm going out there saying, oh man, this role needs filled and I'm going to try to do this. It's literally just going out there and being myself, you know, being who I am on this team, like being me every day. And it filled that role. And so I think it was definitely something that you could look and say, all right, we need that. But it was just also me simply saying, I'm going to just be me. I'm not going to go out there and try to be the third Splash Brother. I'm going to just go be me, and everything else will figure itself out. And so that was kind of the thing for me. It wasn't necessarily, you know, trying to do that. It was more so just, you know, I know how to be me better than I can be anyone else in this world.
And Steve Kerr talked a lot about this, of walking that line between what makes you great is you're going to push the envelope. Sometimes you push it too far with opponents, and then sometimes you might push it too far internally. And whether he pushes back on it, or a teammate pushes back, or management, or you say to yourself, I've gone too far. Do you ever feel like you're all going to have to live with that part of me? Or in the last year, do you take inventory, you look at, you know, I'm not on the court in game five of the finals. I get in trouble this summer off the court. Just the intramural stuff that goes on with a team. Do you just say, hey, that's just who I am, or I've got to learn to manage it better?
You know, I've looked at all those situations, and one thing about me is if I did something wrong, I am the first to tell you I did something wrong. And you know, I don't hide behind my mistakes if I make a mistake, because sometimes I do push that envelope, and sometimes a little too much, whether that's in a game, whether that's, you know, in practice, whatever it is. But I think at the end of the day, number one, I think I've kind of finally found that balance. It's something all preseason I'm like, I got to find this balance. I got to try to find this balance. Like, how do I do that but not lose my energy, my edge? And I struggled with it during the preseason, but it was a trial run. It was like one of those things where I'm talking to Coach Carr, and I'm like, yo, I'm trying to find this balance. Can I find it? I don't know, but I'm telling you now. And he would tell me, listen, I want you to find the balance, but if it's one or the other, forget the balance. Be you. And that's kind of how I approached it as well. Like, I'm really working on this because I think it can help make me better as a player, as a leader, I think it helped make his team better. But if I don't know how to do that, like, I'm gonna just be me, because being me is it's been pretty good. You know, you don't really have as much success as we had if it was really that big of a problem. But not being out there in game five, it was hurtful to see my guys out there going to war without me. More so than just missing a game or being suspended for a game. The success that we has leads to a suspension here and there. I'll take it. You know, that's fine. If it means the type of success that we've had was going to continue. Because, like I said, at the end of the day, I'm going to always be me. You know, but I think I've gotten better with finding that balance of all of it. And so, you know, with the stuff this summer, like, I've never been a guy that gets in trouble. You know, it's all right one night, really at a restaurant, and the stuff happens, and of course I get arrested. Was it crazy? Absolutely. Like, was I in the wrong? Yeah. Can't slap a guy. Were my reasons good? Absolutely. Does it matter? Hell no. Like, you just can't do it, you know? And so I learned from those things, and I think, you know, it helped me a lot, you know, especially coming from off the things that happened in those playoffs with me to right after, boom, get arrested. I think when I look at that situation, what happened with me was, number one, those situations helped me grow, not only as a basketball player, it helped me grow as a man. You know, it showed me where my life was at, and I think it was a good enough slap in the face to where some things happened to me where it didn't completely take me out, but it showed me that I had to tighten up everything in my life. I had to tighten up everything off the court, on the court. I had to be better. You know, I had to catch up with where my celebrity, if you will, had gone. And so where my name in the game had gone, where my impact on the game had gone, I had to catch myself up with that, because it happens. I mean, and I'm not making an excuse, by the way. Last guy to make an excuse. Like I said, if I mess up, I'll tell you I messed up and it was stupid. But everything happened for me so fast, I couldn't see this coming. And I didn't do a good job with keeping up with it. And so the things that happened to me really made me catch up with where I was at. And I'm thankful for those. Now, am I saying I'm thankful because I got in trouble? No. But I am thankful for the experiences to teach me, because, like I said, it was enough to where it was like, hey, you need to do this. But yet it wasn't enough to completely take me out and ruin everything that I've earned. And so that balance is, like I said, I think I've gotten better at it. But, you know, if it was one or the other, it was definitely going to be the other.
How long after the finals would you still wake up in the morning and go, I can't believe we lost that series? Like, I can't believe we lost a 3-1 lead, that we set the regular season win record and we didn't win that title. Do you think that one's, no matter how many titles you win, that one will eat away at you?
I mean, you always think of it and think about, man, we blew an opportunity. But, you know, it ate away at me for a little while. And then I think on July 4th, or was it July 3rd?
It was July 4th. 4th. KD.
Whatever day it was, the 3rd or the 4th. It's like, man, it sucks. And then I got a call from Charlie Bell. Say, man, let's go win some championships.
Charlie works with KD.
Yes. Yeah. And I said, oh. All right, there goes those feelings. We got Kevin Durant out this deal. I'll be just fine. So, you know, it ate away at me till about then. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a silver lining. Like, well, would have been great to win this championship, but the possibilities that this can have of getting Kevin Durant and how many more championships we can win, we'll be fine. And so, you know, as a competitor, it's something you'll always think about. 73 wins, 3-1 lead, all those things. And to win, you know, would have been amazing. So you always think about it as a competitor. But I think the consolation prize was about as big as it can get for us.
I'm not sure anybody knew for sure that Kevin was going to do it, because he I think you wrestled with it till the end. But my sense was you were pretty confident. You were pretty confident that, because you talked to him as much as anyone had through the whole year and then leading up to it, you weren't shocked, maybe surprised, or I knew he was coming.
I wasn't necessarily surprised because I knew he wanted to be here. Like, I knew we had the perfect situation. Like, I knew all those things. But it was still like, as much as he wants to be here, he still have to pull that trigger. And when he pulls this trigger, the backlash that's going to come from it, like, he knows it's coming. Mm-hmm. Will that stop him from pulling this trigger? And so it wasn't more so a surprise to me that he was coming. It was just a shock, like, wow.
He did it.
He did do it. Like, he did pull the trigger. And so, I knew he wanted to be here. I knew it was the perfect fit. Like, I knew he wanted to have fun. He wanted to enjoy every bit of it. He wanted to play a great brand of basketball. He wants to win. And we have all that here, right here for him. Everything he was explaining, he wants. It's like, man, this is the spot for you, I promise you. And nonetheless, I think he's having a lot of fun, by the way. But it was just like, can he really do it? You know, will he do this? And so that was more so the thing for me, is like, I knew it, that he wanted to be here. But is he willing to accept that backlash? And one thing I told him, I said, listen, you come here, you're going to take some backlash, but just know you're not in it by yourself. You take some backlash, we taking it with you. You know, you don't come here and go through anything by yourself. You in it, we in it too. And
you did that in Boston the other night, like just in those instances where if they were going to boo him in Boston because they didn't get him, you know, they probably didn't, they didn't have a great chance in Boston. They did get a meeting, but they probably weren't in it as maybe they hoped. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, he gave you a meeting, like, he didn't have to do that.
And Knicks and Lakers didn't get meetings.
Would they have booed him if he didn't give them a meeting? Like, and so I'm always standing up for my guys. You know, that's how I am. You know, I've always been that way. And that one, I just didn't understand. Some of the things people say, I just don't understand. Whether it's former players, whether it's some current players, whether it's fans want to boo because he gave you a meeting and didn't go there. Like, I just don't get it. Like, some stuff, build a bridge and get over it. Like, I just don't understand some of it.
Now, some guys who you compete against in the NBA and other retired, you know, really good retired players would say to me, Draymond was gaining, even if Kevin didn't come, by sort of the recruitment during the year and the conversations. Because a player, people don't understand, like, Bob Myers, Joe Lacob, Steve Kerr, they can't talk. That starts July 1. We're all naive to think free agency in the league. I mean, agents and executives talk all year long. Like, you can't stop that. But the direct contact with a player is hard to do. That's tampering. But you can do it whenever you want. That you were gaining a competitive advantage in that. This guy, you're competing for the same thing in the West last year, and yet you're talking about being together. Was it ever awkward, or was it ever, you know, 1 minute you're talking about doing it together, next minute you're out going at it at the highest level? Was that ever in competition with each other?
Not at all. I don't think it ever got awkward for 1 minute. During that Western Conference Finals, we didn't really say much of two words to each other because it was so much at stake. It was so much on the line. And so we both understood that, and that didn't make us any less of friends. You know, we still had a friendship. But that really wasn't the time for that. You know, we had a goal and something in mind that we wanted to get to, and they had the same thing. I think if we lose that series, there's no chance he comes here. So that was some added incentive as well. But, I mean, KD guarded me that series. He was all over me. Like, I mean, he was incredible defensively that series. So if there was any doubt, go look at the way he guarded me. I mean, for anybody, if you want to go watch all seven of those games, look at how he was all over me. You know, there's a couple times he came in the lane and I put him on the floor. Like, it's basketball. Mm-hmm. And we are super competitive. So we're not coming out there saying, hey, man, let's get this over with so you can come on over. No, no. I'm going out there trying to win a championship. and all the work you put in, you don't just drop that because it's like, hey, we want KD here and KD may want to come. Nah, you go out there and try to win the championship for both sides. So if anything, I always think it makes it more competitive. You know, when you have a friendship with someone, it makes you want to go at them even harder. And so there was never a point where it was like awkward because it's like, no, you know, I'm going at you. I know you're going at me. We're going for the same thing. Everything else can wait till it's that time.
We talked about the power potentially players in college sports could have if they got together. But in the NBA, I think people have a hard time with this. Free agency is really, whether it was what Miami did when LeBron came there, and then this situation, and there's others where players have taken on the recruiting. No matter how much the league wants to legislate against quote unquote super teams, if guys are willing to take less money, if guys' contracts, if the player coming in is willing to take less, in Miami, guys all took less, sacrificed. You can't stop it. You can't legislate it out. And I think it threatens people that players have that power. Do you think that's part of the backlash?
Absolutely. I think it definitely threatens them that players have so much power. You know, but I think as players, you have to understand that power. You know, when it's time for CBA negotiations and all those things. The LeBron stuff where he went to Miami or KD, those things alone show you how much power that you actually have. And so I think you have to be conscious of those things and understand it and capitalize on it, you know, because you do have power. And like I said, those instances show that. Of course, you know, they want to stop it, but there's just, to a certain extent, if, like you said, if guys are willing to sacrifice a few bucks here and there, there's no way to stop it for winning. You can't really stop it. And so I think, like I said, those are just a few examples where it really show how much power a player actually has and can take advantage of if the players want.
Talked about last summer, the Olympic team. Your minutes as that Olympic tournament went on dwindled at a time when the team was looking for defensive intensity, physicality. There was enough scoring. There's usually always enough scoring on an Olympic team. Were you surprised about how much your role diminished as you got to the medal round? And did you wonder the reason?
You know, I was very surprised, you know, that it's like, all right, maybe I'll get more minutes here. And like all of a sudden I played 1 minute. I was very shocked, you know, at the amount of minutes that I did play. However, I never complained or, you know, like made a scene about it. At the end of the day, I'm on the Olympic team. Like, it's not about me. You know, we're winning games and we win. I don't really care. You know, it's an honor to be there. Of course, I wonder, you know, as a competitor, as a guy who really thinks the game and understands everything about the game, I definitely wondered because I would look at certain situations and say, yeah, I can definitely go do that, you know. And so I kind of wonder, like, am I being punished for, like, the things that's happened over the course of the summer? Like, maybe I am. But nonetheless, if a punishment is sitting on the bench of an Olympic gold medal team and winning a gold medal, I'll take that punishment any day of the year. So, you know, like I said, as a competitor, I definitely wondered and really couldn't figure it out, but I never complained or never honestly cared that much to where it's like, hey, this is like crazy and this is killing me. No, like, we're winning. Mm-hmm. I'm fine. Now, if we can't win and I know there's a void I can fill, I may have a problem with that.
Right.
But we're winning. Who am I to complain and say, oh, I should be doing this? I know. Like, that's not me. I just want to win.
Yeah, and nobody probably, when you're on the Olympic team and you're representing the country, I think there's probably a different public reaction if you come out. It's different than if you voiced something about being on an NBA team versus the national team. Do you have to be conscious of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because everybody's all-stars. Everybody's good. And this is not about you. It's about representing the country the right way. You know, it's about trying to bring a gold medal back. It's about all those things that's not you. And so to come out and voice and say, oh, I'm disappointed I'm not playing, like, that is one of the most selfish things in the world. You know, to make it about you, it's ridiculous. So I was never the guy who even thought about trying to make it about me. Like, so much bigger than me or any other one person on that team. This is about our country. You know, like I said, trying to represent our country in the right way. That's the bottom line. So to ever try to make it about yourself or anyone else is not. It's much bigger than that.
Draymond, I appreciate you, man, taking the time out.
Appreciate it, Woj. Like I said before, man, it's a great podcast. You know, I've heard it a million times with a bunch of different guys, and I'm honored. So thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. A big thank you to our guest today, Golden State Warriors all-star forward Draymond Green. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast, and be sure to subscribe to the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick and the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. You can find us on thevertical.com, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and of course iTunes. And you can now hear us on the Vertical Podcast Network every weekday at 3 p.m. on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. We'd also like to take a moment to thank our sponsors today, SeatGeek and Movement Watches. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.